show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, it's been a little bit of a rough time to be a Royals fan as of the last month, 6 weeks or so. Things were not necessarily looking up, but you were wondering if the Royals could stand pat and they may make some noise. And things have continued to look even further and further down. So before we get into all that, introductions, of course, I am Jeff Herr. With me, as always, the man, the myth, the legend, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this somewhat somber Royals evening?
This feels a little familiar. You know, I was kind of
familiar than I'd like to admit.
Yeah, I always knew that things were going to change a little bit, but I didn't figure that this year was going to be where it would start to, you know, take a downturn. But you know, here we are. Royals aren't playing well to open the second half, and we're at the end of July, where a lot of tough decisions get made. So, you know, that's what's on my mind, and that's what we are here to talk about.
That is certainly it indeed. And, you know, it's one of those things where we've kind of talked about this, just you and me and some of the BP Kansas City guys, where I think if you're most other teams, like you look at the Yankees right now, right? They just traded Aroldis Chapman, and they are, let's see, what's their exact? They're 52-48 right now. So they're four games above 500. They're only four games out of the wild card, and they're essentially sellers right now because they have determined, they've figured out where they are, and they said, we don't think this is manageable. Let's try and build a little bit more for the future and hunker down for next season, right? So the Royals are 3.5 games behind them. And the only problem is, so the Royals are 48-51 right now, but as of last night, they were 48-50, which, if that sounds familiar at all to you, it's because the Royals were exactly 48-50 in 2000 after the All-Star break, when everyone was saying Ned Yost should be fired, Dayton Moore's experiment is over, this team is, it just can't, it's not going to happen. Then they ripped off 19 of their next 23 games and never looked back. 2 years later, the World Series champions. So it'd be easy to say you're out of it if you were 48-50. It'd be easy to say you're out of it if, even if you could, if you knew, okay, your team has made runs in the past, but this team has made this exact, very specific run before. So it's so hard to, I mean, you can't necessarily blame them a ton, because there's evidence there, because it's happened. It's literally happened before. You know, in years past, the Royals might be slightly below 500 at midseason. And every year after the Colorado Rockies in 2007, when they made the World Series, they had that great run to end the season. They won like 14 of 15 games, and they swept the playoffs like the Royals did in 14 to get into the World Series. They ended up losing. But ever since the Rockies just ripped off all those wins and made it happen, I had told myself every year, I was like, you know what, why not the Royals? Just, you know, you could convince yourself that maybe it could happen. And then it finally did multiple times. They did it in 2013. They did it in 2014. They did it in 2015. So it's like, there truly is evidence that this has happened before. So it's not a why not us thing. It's a we've done it before. We just need to do it again. We need that thing to happen. But, you know, unfortunately, I don't see it happening, Mike. I don't see it.
Yeah, I don't either. And, you know, when we look back at 2014, that's, I mean, obviously when the Royals fell to 48-50, that was kind of like the big flashing light. It was like, okay, we know that in 2014 they were 48-50. They went on, they won five games in a row. They lost a couple. They won another three. They lost one. Then they went on that eight-game winning streak, took over first place, you know, and just kind of kept the ball rolling at that point all the way to the end of the regular season where, you know, on the last day they were a game behind Detroit. You know, if they win and Detroit loses, you go for a tiebreaker game for the division. And you know, considering that they'd been at 48-50, that's pretty remarkable run. You know, and so, yeah, on that front, it is reasonable, I suppose, to be this team and say, hey, look, you know, we've been in this kind of situation before. We've made that kind of run before. But this is a different team. I mean, it's you've got Mike Moustakas has been out since May. Alex Gordon hasn't been hitting very well. Kendrys Morales is, you know, up and down. You've got second base has been kind of a mess. You thought for a second there that Whit Merrifield was going to be the answer, and he didn't adjust to the league very well. Right field is still a question. Lorenzo Cain has been out for about a month. You know, you've got a pitching rotation that is far worse than what you had in 2014. I guess, you know, on paper, the name-wise, maybe it doesn't seem like it, but the performance is definitely a lot worse. And so in 2014, you got some really great performances from Danny Duffy and Yordano Ventura, plus you had James Shields, and you had the completely bland and milquetoast Jason Vargas, who just gives you six innings and gives up three runs and keeps you in the game. And you know, they had Holland, they had Herrera, they had Davis. So there were a lot more pieces on that kind of team. You know, and so on that front, you know, this is a vastly different team just because you've got a lot of guys. Chester Cuthbert's playing at third base. Paulo Orlando is mostly playing in right. You know, it's the weapons don't seem to be there this time. Plus, you know, the Royals in 2014, you know, they were a little closer to first place. They were in third place and they were closer to second place than they are. You know, they were a game and a half behind second place team. I believe it was Cleveland at that point in 2014. You know, now they're 9.5 behind Cleveland. They're a game and a half behind the White Sox for third place. So they're in fourth place, and they're in the same amount of distance to make up just to get into third place. Plus, there's, you know, they're farther behind in the wild card. They have two extra teams they would have to pass in the wild card right now. Plus, when you're looking at the trade deadline this time of year, a lot of teams with more prospects or maybe more talent right now, they have fewer holes to fill and more weapons to go out and trade for a guy to fill them, whereas the Royals are basically trying to do anything to just stop the bleeding from that fifth spot in the rotation. You know, not even to talk about improving somewhere. It's just, you know, you can't find that impact guy. You've got to find a guy who can just get you through, you know, one turn in the rotation. And if you don't have that guy, it's really going to be difficult to run off a five-game winning streak or an eight-game winning streak or anything more than that, just because every fifth time you got to go to who knows who you're going to use. I mean, they've had Chris Young there. They've had Dylan G there. They've had Brian Flynn there. They've, you know, it's been a mess. And to look at it now reasonably, it just doesn't seem like they've got it to do anything. And if that means that they need to take a step back and regroup and you know, look at next year as, you know, one more push, then that seems to be the reasonable thing. And that's something we've talked about a couple of times because, you know, you could see the writing on the wall that they were kind of around 500 here and there and that this decision was probably going to happen. And then things just kind of cratered. I mean, they opened up the second half winning three out of the first 11 games. And, you know, most of those have been at home. You know, they're going to play tonight. They just started playing against the Angels. But they're 2-6. You know, they're 2-6 at home in the second half after pretty much dominating at home all season. And, you know, I don't know if that's just everybody's pressing at the same time or it's just a lot of things catching up to them. But, you know, it's a big hole to climb out of. And I don't know that they have the resources to do it this year. So, you know, maybe it's time to sell. Maybe it's time to go back into trying to get prospects and get guys who can help next year and beyond. Because, you know, Johnny Cueto's not walking through that door. Ben Zobrist isn't walking through that door. And they wouldn't even have the guys they could trade to bring those guys in at this stage. You know, after trading so many arms last year, you know, that farm system is a bottom five farm system. It's just tough to get anybody in, especially if they don't want to add payroll. So, you know, the Royals were in an awkward spot before because, hey, would they be able to make it? Would they be able to go for it or not? Now, you know, if I were them, I would be really thinking about how you can sell guys. You know, we talked last week, you know, you don't want to trade somebody who is going to be on next year's team unless it's just really a haul. And so, you know, you're looking at guys who are going to be free agents this year. Those are the guys you would probably look to trade off just because then you can load up for next year and you don't have to trade anybody you expect to be a contributor next year. And I would guess that's probably what's, you know, what conversations are going on. But, you know, it's disappointing. It's disappointing to, you know, have high hopes of defending the crown and they're, you know, the odds are against them to do that. And, you know, they never said it was easy, but it still seems like, well, you make two World Series in a row, you kind of think, well, yeah, this maybe this is easy, but it has been anything but this season.
Yeah, you know, and it did seem like everything really just came super easy to the Royals the last couple of years, and or I guess the last year and a half, you could probably say. And now here we are, and, you know, you bring up a good point that they have to kind of evaluate, you know, what's their situation this year? What's their situation next year? Who's helping this year? Who's helping next year? Who's expendable? You know, kind of put all these things into the machine, if you will, and it'll spit out a name. And, you know, you look at, you know, guys like Volquez and Morales and say, okay, well, those guys aren't going to be here next year. So can we afford to lose them this year? And then what does that say about our team? What message does that say to the fans? You know, cause I honestly think, you know, we talked about the Yankees at the top of the show. I think that they're in a fortunate spot that they're the Yankees. You know, there's no one, the Yankees are never going to have what the Royals had to deal with from 85 to 2015, essentially. You know, even if the Yankees were that bad, I still don't know that they would ever, I mean, they wouldn't be just because they have so much money, but even if they were just really bad, I still don't, you know, there's just so much history and so much tradition and so much identity wrapped up in that franchise that I don't think you get to the point where the Royals were, but the Royals didn't have that history, you know, and they built it up from when they were a farm system and everything was going great the first roughly 20 years of their existence, and then things tanked. And so now they're finally starting to get it back. And as a front office, they have to kind of look and say, is there a way, you know, we have to balance this because we engendered so much goodwill from the fan base that we don't want to make it look like we're just putting up shop. And because the implicit message in there, besides the hey, we're foregoing this season, is okay, it's going to be a couple of years for us to rebuild. That's not necessarily what they're intending. I guess implicit is the wrong word, but the, you know, kind of hidden message that fans might read into is okay, now they're just giving up now and going back into rebuilding mode. And that's not the case. You can still trade people this season in order to make you better, kind of like what you were saying, take one step back to take two steps forward next year and get back to being that World Series caliber team, especially when you're healthy. So, I mean, it's really tough to kind of have to deal with that. And no matter what you say, especially this fan base, you know, I mean, you don't hear it as much now, but, you know, how often did we hear, oh, David Glass is cheap, he'll never spend money, you know, and he was bringing in guys like, you know, they weren't huge Clayton Kershaw, David Price contracts, but you know, they weren't small potatoes either when you talk about Omar Infante and Jason Vargas and bringing in those contracts. So, you know, David Glass was spending money for the better part of the last decade he's been spending money. It just hasn't been as overt as some people think. So, you know, it's easy for people to kind of fall back into that mode and think, okay, well, the Royals are selling off, it's over, and you know, it was a fun couple of years.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily what they're doing. So, you know, it's a really difficult position to be in. I don't envy the front office at all, but I do think at this point it's rather clear where this season is going, and that is to say nowhere. I don't think they're not gonna be 05, 06, 07 Royals losing 95 to 100 games, but they're definitely not 13, 14, 15 Royals. Maybe close to 13. I doubt it though. I just don't think they have that run in them. You know, I think they have a decent run that they can make, but you know, more of like a 17 of 30 or something like that, you know, where it's just like a solid run, no huge 19 of 23 like they did in 2014 to really put them back in this race. But so, you know, the real question that I look at is there a player on this team? And we talk Volquez and Morales of who can, you know, because they're most likely going to be gone next year. Is there a player on this team that would be on the team next year that you could still trade and you'd still be okay with? So, I mean, for you, is there anybody on this roster who contractually will be on the team next year that you'd be okay with losing at this point?
Okay with losing. Well, I mean,
that's worth something. Obviously, like Dyson, I mean, okay, you know, like,
right, yeah.
Even though I still would be a little depending on what they got back, but you know what I mean. So like,
yeah.
Of the core of the starters, the anticipated everyday players, is there one that you could be okay with losing?
Well, so much depends on just what the return is, and that's always tough to gauge. I don't think that the Royals want to trade any of those guys. So right off the bat, they're pretty much in a position where they have to be completely overwhelmed to where they can't say no. And so if that's the kind of deal that they get offered, I mean, I probably would feel okay with it, just because if it's just one piece, you know, it's not like that's a full fire sale and a full rebuild, and you're just trying to like load up on prospects and trade all these guys who are going to be gone after 2017. You know, if it's like one guy, you can probably get a couple of impact guys if it's the right person. You know, right now, the only guys who are really, you know, I don't know if there's anybody who's playing that well to do that. You know, if you're talking about, you know, even guys like Volquez and Hochaver and Kendrys Morales, who are going to be free agents after this year. I mean, I'm assuming they all have mutual options, which those never end up, you know, being consummated. Really,
right?
You know, I think those guys could bring something back. Maybe not impact things. It would kind of depend on the team that they matched up with. But as far as guys who are going to be here next year, or at least who are, you know, set up to be here next year, the name that's come up most often has been Wade Davis, which is a difficult one to consider giving up because he's been such a big part of the Royals' kind of blueprint. You know, as a setup guy or a closer, you know, he's so dominant and he's been so effective the last couple of seasons. It would be really tough to trade him off knowing that you would have to fill that spot next year. But at the same time, he's probably the guy who gets you the most value right now. And, you know, the Royals, you know, the Cubs, before they traded for Chapman, they asked the Royals for Wade Davis and they, you know, just to see what it would take. And, you know, the Royals were pretty much like, you know, they told them that I don't know any names or any kind of range of players, but the Cubs gave up a guy who was considered their number one prospect. And that's the Cubs, you know, who've been so good at developing position players over the last couple of years. You know, they traded their top prospect, a shortstop, and you know, another guy who is currently in the Yankees top five now after this trade. So, yeah, those are the kind of guys that the Yankees or that the Cubs felt comfortable trading to get Chapman. So what does that say about a guy like Davis, who has been better than Chapman and has an extra year of control? you know, what did the Royals ask for there? Did they ask for like three of their top four prospects to get him, or, you know, they asked for the number one prospect in Kyle Schwarber, or, you know, I don't know. And, you know, I'd be interested to see what the, you know, what that conversation worked out to, but that kind of sets what the Royals are looking for. I mean, you're looking at like, yeah, I would feel comfortable with it if it was like two guys, if they got two prospects back who are top 20 overall, not top 20 of that system, but top 20 overall. And that limits the teams. Just notes that I jotted down just off the top of my head, guys like, you know, Texas could use a closer or at least another bullpen arm. You know, Boston doesn't really need a closer, but maybe they would entertain something. But the Nationals could use a guy too. They used a guy other than Jonathan Papelbon to close today. And apparently there have been some discussions. And so that puts you in that territory of guys like Trey Turner and Lucas Giolito, who are like both top 10 overall guys. And I don't know if the Naturals or if the Nationals would do that. And so I think that comes down to the Royals probably won't be trading any of those guys. But, you know, maybe Lorenzo Cain comes back and the Royals are able to trade him off for, you know, somebody after the deadline or something. You know, I think Davis is kind of the only guy. I wouldn't think that they would want to trade Hosmer away or Cain. I guess you could maybe look at Moustakas, but it's, you know, any team that would trade for him would be trading for him for next year, which doesn't really help any, you know, playoff contenders right now, since he's going to be out until spring training. So, you know, I don't think it really works out too well. You know, it would have to be maybe someone like a Danny Duffy or maybe like a Yordan Aventura, which I think the Royals would still be asking for quite a lot in those situations. I think it boils down just to Davis. And, you know, if they're able to get Giolito, who's arguably the top prospect or maybe top pitching prospect at least in baseball, and Turner, who is an excellent shortstop, yeah, I mean, I think I could probably come to grips with that. But anything else, it would be kind of difficult to really, give in, considering that the Royals should have a full team next year that they expect to be able to contend with, and you know, get guys healthy, come back, and give it another shot for one last shot at the playoffs and at another championship.
Get the band back together.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I don't, I mean, they could surprise. I mean, it certainly, you know, things kind of develop strangely. I didn't really figure that, you know, David Price would get traded at a certain point, you know, over the last couple of years, and he did. So, you know, things happen, but I think the Royals are fairly conservative on those kind of things, and Davis is maybe the only guy, and I think they would be looking for very specific players in that situation. And, you know, Texas, maybe it'd be like Joey Gallo and Nomar Mazara. That's kind of the territory you're in. And those are both top 10 guys overall, too. So, you know, if that's the price, I don't know if any other teams are willing to pay it for even a year and 2 months of Wade Davis, even with how dominant he's been. But, you know, if they offer it, the Royals are going to listen. And they may or may not say yes, but they will probably listen and hem and haw over it. So I don't really see anybody else, though. I think Davis, maybe I'm overlooking somebody. Maybe you had somebody else in mind when you came up with that question. But Davis is the only guy that really jumps out to me.
No, I'm with you. I think Davis is the only guy. And, you know, I think a lot of people are in your boat that, you know, Davis has been such a big part of this organization and plans to be moving forward for next year, at least, that it would take that kind of, you know, make me an offer that I absolutely can't refuse to actually let him go. But I'm kind of in the other camp, which is that, you know, really, it seems to me like Davis would be the prudent piece to move. Now, I'm not advocating, you know, get less than he's worth just to move him, but right. The idea that what they got, what the Yankees got for Chapman, And then you think about Davis has an additional year of control on top of the rest of this year. You should be able to get more. And, you know, not only is there nobody in the farm system who can help this team, but there's nobody in the farm system who can help this team next year. I mean, the Royals just brought up Raul Mondesi yesterday, which we haven't really talked about, but I mean, he's kind of it.
That's
kind of the last
piece.
You know, I mean, you could argue maybe Hunter Dozier can have some help for this team at some point, but I don't see him as an impact player in 2017. You know, Kyle Zimmer, I mean, he's gone as far as I'm concerned. He might as well not even be in the organization anymore, because I don't see it happening with him. So, you know, there's a chance to give up someone who, as vital as he has been, you know, you're dealing from a position of strength where most teams would, even though the Royals bullpen hasn't been as good this year, most teams would still kill for it. So if you're dealing from that position, you've got Wade Davis that you can give up, then you slide Herrera right into the closing spot, and then you've still got Hochaver, you've still got Sori, even though they haven't been that hot lately, you know, you've still got those two who we know what their ceilings are, which is very good. And then, you know, Greg Holland's still out there. Now, obviously, he's got Tommy John, and he's got to recover from that, and there's no guarantee that he'll be effective when he comes back, but he's still an option that you can get. And if he's your fourth guy in the bullpen, you know, I think you can live with that. And you can make some other acquisitions of some other guys, like Dayton Moore has done in the past, to kind of shore things up. So, you know, to me, I like to look at, okay, depending on what, say the realistic offer for Wade Davis, say it's from the Nationals, you know, because we've used that example, is it's not Giolito and Turner, but it's Giolito or Turner and then two other lesser prospects. So, you know, still maybe kind of lower top 100 guys, even, you know, I think that's, mm-hmm. that's reasonable, or at least one lower top 100 guy and then like a fringe kind of high upside, low level prospect maybe. So you've got one guy that can help you right away, and then you've got another guy that may be able to come up and help sometime next season or, you know, after that, both of which that you control for a really long time. You know, the possible benefit of that scenario, especially if you're talking somebody like a Giolito who can give you 150 to 200 innings possibly next year of above average starting pitching.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's more valuable than a closer, because as we've seen this year, having the best closer in baseball doesn't really mean all that. You know, it's the same argument we heard all those years.
30 innings.
Yeah, it's the same argument we heard all those years when Soria was killing it. You know, it's if you're not winning games, you don't need a closer. So it's, you know, obviously they're planning that. You can talk yourself into, okay, we've been unlucky this year. We have been unhealthy this year. A healthy team next year is going to be winning more, and Wade Davis will be used more. And I will totally listen to and buy that argument.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think part of where I come from is most teams don't have a Kelvin Herrera that they could just plug in to be a closer. You know, similar to when Greg Holland was out for the season, most teams don't have a Wade Davis they could plug in
right. And
be the closer, right? So the Royals are in an advantageous position. And it would be a bold move for sure, but it's a move that they could really take advantage of where they're at to get some players in that can help them out, you know, not only next season, but then beyond. So, I mean, if it's me, I probably – because I think right now the Royals have maybe put the word out that someone like a Wade Davis is there for the right deal, and they're talking to people, but I don't think they're kind of pursuing anything. If it was me, I might be a little bit more on the – pursuing side of trying to find the right deal.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I don't fault the Royals for their position at all. But if it's me, I think I might be making a few calls instead of just taking them. But
yeah,
that's just kind of where I come out.
Now that makes sense. I mean, you know, there's nothing that says that the Royals can't just, you know, find a guy in their minor leagues who can throw 95 and up with, you know, a sharp breaking ball, and he just develops into something like that too. I mean, that's what Holland was, and Herrera was a guy who was, they tried to make him a starter in the minors for so long, and
mm-hmm.
you know, they finally just gave in and were like, all right, you're going to be a reliever. And turns out this guy's really awesome as a reliever. And so, you know, I think that kind of works in their favor. They do have that track record, and that's been a Dayton Moore thing since the whole time, basically. I mean, he just finds these guys. He just, you know, if absolutely nothing else, he can build a bullpen. And, you know, he's really good at finding those guys who have those kind of skills that work in that environment. So they could rebuild it probably pretty easy. That's probably the most comfortable rebuilding thing for Dayton Moore, you know, when you're not picking in the top five for a few years in the draft, which, you know, that's where a lot of those core guys came from, is the draft in, you know, 07, 08, 09, 2010, all that. Now it's, you know, they're picking at the back end and they're not hitting on a lot of these guys. So it's, you know, obviously a little more difficult. So yeah, if Wade Davis is the guy who can get you two top prospects, or, you know, maybe one top prospect and a couple of really intriguing ones, especially if they're somewhat close to the big leagues, yeah, you might listen to that more. I think they're kind of in the same feeling that they think there's a small chance, and they're right, there's a small chance they can still make that run this year, because they've seen it before, as we've covered in this show and previously. But that, you know, realistically, they do have to kind of be ready to listen to those things. The other thing on the trading deadline that intrigues me is some of these deals, if they're looking for guys like that, that fit that profile of, you know, high upside, strong, you know, strong performance and major league ready or very close to it, a lot of those guys are on the 40-man rosters. You know, guys like Giolito and Turner and Joey Gallo, and, you know, those guys are already, you know, have played some in the big leagues, or they're on the 40-man rosters or what have you. And that complicates things after the trading deadline because of the waiver process. Any of those guys would not be able to pass through waivers because teams will claim them. If you're the Twins, you're going to claim Joey Gallo if someone puts him on waivers. And then the Rangers will have to pull him back. They can't make a deal with anybody. So if the Royals are going to make a deal like that, if there's one on the table, they have to make that decision by that deadline, or else it becomes a lot more difficult for them to make that kind of a deal, unless they're willing to trade some of those guys off for, you know, guys who are probably in like high A, maybe double A, who have high upside but aren't on the 40-man roster, who then don't have to clear through, you know, and can just be traded to whomever. That's a lot easier after the deadline. They just have to get their guy through, be it Volquez or Davis or whomever. So that's another thing that I kind of have in mind, especially with, you know, these kind of guys. Gallo is a guy who kind of fits for what the Royals might want to do. You know, if they're willing to trade Kendrys Morales somewhere, they would need a DH type, and Gallo is a DH type. You know, he's a guy, if the Royals got him, he would break the home run record. Certain of it. He might strike out 220 times doing it, but he'd put up a 40. You know, he would finally crack that ceiling, you know? So that's a guy that I think that they would possibly be pretty interested in. And Turner and Giolito are the same kind of way. It's, you know, they're guys who would have to clear through, and there's not a single team that wouldn't try to claim them just to see what would happen. And so if the Royals are going to do any of those moves, I don't think they do them after the deadline for impact guys like that. I think if they're waiting to see what happens in the next week, they probably need to have the groundwork in place now, so that, you know, if in 4 days they're still in this tough stretch, they've got to be ready to move and get the best value for some of these guys. You know, especially when you're talking about, you know, someone you might want to move that could be on next year's team, just because the value you get next year out of having them on the roster already, you know, you don't have to replace them. You know what you're getting. They're impact guys, and specifically Wade Davis. You know, it's a tough guy to replace, or if you do replace it, it's tough to replace down the line. You know, so they really need to kind of have that stuff ready, and I assume they will. I mean, they're probably talking about buying and selling at this stage. It's just that I think selling is probably the way they will ultimately have to go, which is unfortunate, because that's the kind of place we haven't had to be in a while. But, you know, if it's, you know, half a step back and you take a shot next year, that's fine. I mean, Detroit's in second place and they sold at the deadline last year. So it's not the end of the world. It just is disappointing.
Yeah. And I honestly think that if they were the Yankees, you know, I think they'd be doing the same thing the Yankees are doing, because I do think that the Royals are having garnered all this fan support in the last couple of years. I do think the Royals are very acutely aware of it and don't want to lose it, rightfully so. So I feel like that has a major impact in their decision making in this regard. So I guess at most I'd be very curious to see if they had that kind of a Yankees scenario to see what their decision making process would be. You know, Wade Davis might already be gone, but that's a very good point you made about the timing of it, that, you know, they pretty much have to have a deal in place now if they want to make it all fit together and do it right. So we'll see in the next couple of days. We'll find out if the Royals are going to stand pat or what they're going to do. And we all thought they were crazy for standing pat 2 years ago. And, you know, I don't, this team isn't the team from 2 years ago. They're definitely not the team from last year, but they're also not the team from 2 years ago. You know, it's weird because you wonder what message does it send to the fans. If we don't do anything, does it say, okay, we're just going to eat this one and regroup for next year? If you trade, you know, are people going to interpret as they're giving up and planning for the future?
Yeah, especially the new fans you just got back.
Yeah, or you could also trade and then spin it as we're not cutting it this year, so we're trying to get better this year, you know, and it's like, There's a whole bunch of ways you can spin it. How are the fans going to interpret it? How's that going to play into the attendance numbers? I mean, who knows? So it's right. I don't envy them that decision making process one bit. But you mentioned, did we cover all the? We kind of covered all the through that discussion, all the trade possible trade. We didn't really talk about San Francisco.
Yeah, they're kind of just recently popped up as looking for pitching, and I think a guy like Volquez. I mean, we talked about some of the guys on the market last year or last show, and there weren't a lot of great names. I mean, Rich Hill was kind of the top guy, and while Rich Hill is talented, it's not Johnny Cueto, it's not David Price, it's not Cole Hamels from 2015. Mm-hmm. It's just a guy, you know. It's a bunch of guys like that. And you know, when you've got the Phillies out there reportedly saying that they want a top five prospect for Jeremy Hellickson, who's whatever, and he's Jeremy Hellickson, you know, it does make you think about what Volquez could command, who has a playoff record, who has had some good seasons the last couple of years, who's a 200 inning kind of guy, who, you know, he's pitched okay, except for some notable blowups. You know, he's definitely was better last year, but he hasn't been a total disaster. And maybe that's just the relative performance, you know, compared to the rest of the Royals starting rotation. But, you know, I think he could bring something pretty decent to the Royals if they were looking to trade him. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, it might be, I don't think you'd get a top 10 overall type of guy probably, but there might be something out there if a team really wanted him and if the Royals made him available, since it's really a market where if you've got one of the best, you know, trade chips out there, you might be able to cash in. I mean, it's just like Chapman. He sets the market for closers right now. And so now any deal is going to have that in mind as a reference point. And, you know, if the Phillies are saying that, that's probably something they feel confident they could maybe at least get close to. Or at least you start negotiating for a top five and you settle for a top 10, you know, it allows them to kind of set that market that way. And, you know, if that's the case, the Royals can be right in on that in the same kind of way with a pitcher who I would probably consider would fit in as one of the top, you know, three or four possible arms that a team could go get, you know, a reliable guy that could be your third, fourth, fifth starter, if, you know, depending on what your rotation looks like. You know, that's pretty valuable when you just need to try to get through the next 2 months and you get into setting a playoff roster and things like that. If you've got, you know, a 7-game series and your fourth starter gets to be Edinson Volquez, that's not bad, considering that he won two World Series, was the starting pitcher in two World Series game wins last year.
Yes.
So it's, you know, it's not, it's a good place to be if the Royals are willing to sell him off to a team for, you know, some kind of prospect. And considering that he's going to be a free agent next year, it's, you know, I feel, you know, when we're talking about Wade Davis, it's like, well, we have our hesitation just because the deal has to be right. But for a guy like Volquez, if you get someone good, you know, that's better than trying to see if you can get some compensation for him next season or, you know, this winter.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, I mean, the Hellickson thing is, in terms of a possible Volquez trade, the Hellickson thing is super encouraging to see that, because by most accounts you would say, you know, if you're talking about either one's going to be a rental, so if you're talking about the next 3 months, you know, Volquez is has a longer history of dependability, you know, a better upside, and as you mentioned, the recent history of not only good playoff performances, but, you know, World Series, highest, the biggest possible stage, and he won 2 World Series games and also had a fantastic start to the ALCS. You and I were at that game last year against the Blue Jays when they needed it against a very powerful lineup, and he shut them down. So, you know, he's, like you said, he's been more inconsistent this year. But, I mean, he's coming up. This is, you know, now 3 years of pretty solidly consistent pitching with high upside, with playoff experience. So, I mean, if you're trying to make that push, and as you said, you're looking at your fourth or fifth starter, or, you know, fourth starter for the playoffs, I mean, you're in really good shape if that's Volquez. So, and, you know, I definitely think that if getting an organization's, you know, one of their top 10 guys or something, you know, I mean, again, it's only helping, because if Volquez, and he's shown this year that because of his higher level of inconsistency, he's not kind of the stopper, the dependable stopper he was last year so much. And if you take that away, which kind of allows this team to go into these spirals that they've gone into, like they're in now, then you don't have as much, and it's not as, you know, he's not as valuable to this team this year. And if he's not going to be here next year, then, you know, let's make something happen here. And then if you look at, if you can trade, you know, Volquez and then Morales in the same boat where he's not going to be here next year, if you can get something similar for Morales for a team, and your options are much more limited there, because you've got to be looking at an AL team who needs a DH or something. But if you can trade them, and then maybe you trade Wade Davis too, I mean, then it looks bad for this season. I think that's what stops you from trading all of them. It looks really bad. It looks like a fire sale, but it's really not, because those guys aren't going to be there next year anyway. And then whatever you can get for them, if they're major league ready or close, then maybe you can give them some major league time this year, or maybe you bring up Hunter Dozier and he DHs for a little while and you see what you've got with him this season. And maybe Brett Eibner is your full-time DH and you see truly what you've got when he's playing every day and hitting every day. And, you know, I mean, there's some options, because essentially you could trade those three guys, net 5 to 7 prospects. That's going to replenish your farm system, and you're really only out one guy from next. It's a big piece with Wade Davis, but you're really only out one guy for next year, and his role as closer effectively wouldn't be that different, because Herrera is pretty close to as good as he is. So, I mean, the trickle down effect is that now you don't have Herrera in the eighth, and then you don't have, you know, Soria in the seventh or Hochaver in the seventh or, you know, whatever. So there's, you know, at some point it catches up to you, but I would love to see the Royals be bold in that regard. As you mentioned, the Tigers are a great example. I don't think the Tigers have, you know, their roster's older than the Royals. So I don't think they have the wherewithal right now to make that happen. But sorry, that's weird. I'm watching the game on my phone as we're recording here. I just saw Paolo Orlando rob Mike Trout of a home run, but my score app indicated that Mike Trout hit a home run.
He's that good.
He fooled the internet. Way to go, Mike Trout. So it wasn't even a robbed, it was just like a nice catch in front of the wall. You know, so it's clear. I was like, well, maybe it was a delay and that wasn't actually Mike Trout that I just saw make the catch, but no, I saw Trout off the field. So anyway, sorry about that. but yeah, so I would love to see, because Dayton Moore, you know, he last year he was bold and it paid off huge. Okay, mm-hmm. A World Series.
He got the two, you know, exact and, guys he should have gotten.
Yeah, and trading Will Myers for James Shields and all that was bold, you know, and the majority of the other trades he's made have been kind of small dink and dunk deals that have been, you know, mostly safe. And he's made some decent free agent signings, but you know, his truly bold trades have actually worked out really well. Zach Greinke netted him two ALCS MVPs. The Will Myers trade got him James Shields and Wade Davis, who we're now talking about. And then if you could turn around and flip Wade Davis, that makes that trade look even better. So, you know, and obviously the Cueto Zobrist deals that helped win the World Series. So when he's been bold, it's worked. When he's played it safe, the results have been kind of middling. So why not be bold? You know, be brave. Drink some Dos Equis or something. I don't know. Make it happen. Call up. Who's the national? Mike Rizzo. Call him up. You know, after having a down in a few
Dos
Equis, you know, and be bold, my friends. That's all I'm saying. Is all I'm saying.
Just knowing how Dayton is, I just don't know that that's the way he operates.
No, that certainly is not the way he operates. Like, I don't even know bold, if he's ever had a Dos Equis. But.
Bold for him. I mean, I'm sure he's had some, but bold for him just doesn't seem to, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I might be mischaracterizing him completely. Just
fun to be wrong in this scenario.
Side note on that is when you get around to reading The Arm, there's a chapter in there where they're talking about John Lester's negotiations as a free agent.
Yeah.
And basically that Theo Epstein is just basically does Jaeger shots during these negotiations.
No way.
Yeah. Like just awesome. Just balls to the wall, just goes for it. And it's like, okay. Like 3 a.m, they're just drunk negotiating and arguing over numbers. It's an interesting passage.
That's fantastic. I definitely need to read that. It's on my nightstand right now, so I definitely need to read that. But as we're talking about the future here and what the Royals could do, we'll end on this final note here. One of the things that a non-trade thing that's kind of picked up a little steam recently is when talking about the future, specifically beyond 2017, a possible long-term deal for Eric Hosmer. So some things, question mark,
yeah.
Some things have been picking, like I said, just kind of a groundswell of rumors and such. And then apparently, Mike, I didn't hear it on the radio, but apparently it was relayed to Mike and I that Mike Boddicker, he comes on 8:10 in the mornings, and I believe he does some random spots throughout the week on the other shows. But Boddicker mentioned that there was a deal in place from the Royals for Eric Hosmer. He didn't have any other info on what the actual deal was or anything like that, but mentioned on the radio there was a deal in place for Eric Hosmer, and you know, it just was a matter of being signed. And that his thought process was that, you know, maybe that's what's been bothering him a little bit, is worrying about this deal, that his long-term deal that he could or could not sign, and whether he should or shouldn't. And, you know, I mentioned this, Mike, to you and to others before, that I think all things equal, ceteris paribus, as they say in the economics world, all things being equal,
gonna have to look that
AKA the money,
right?
Then I truly do think at this point Eric Hosmer would stay in Kansas City. 2 years ago I wouldn't have said that, but now I for all the talk it gets about the family feeling that the team has and all that kind of stuff, I do believe it exists, and I've heard enough firsthand accounts of people seeing them in the locker room to know that it does exist. So I will say, you know, that I do think that if all things were equal, Eric Hosmer would choose to stay in Kansas City. I think he likes it here. Why not? You know, you're the big fish in a medium-sized pond if you're here in Kansas City. So, you know, that's pretty cool. If he goes to New York, like, obviously he's still famous, but he's definitely not – he's not A-Rod. He's not Derek Jeter. You know, he's not Eli Manning. He's not any of those people in New York. So, you know, I don't know how much that matters to him. But – you know, the two things are, would he sign here? But then also, what are the Royals offering, and is he worth that much? So right now, if it's me, I would sign Eric. I would give Eric Hosmer a 7-year, $125 million contract. I'd say sign it. It's yours, because that ends up being, let's see, was that roughly $18 million a year, a little less. So you're giving him basically what you're giving Alex Gordon, guaranteed for 7 years. I'd probably make it $126 million. I think that would exactly be $18 million a year. Okay, so I think that's the deal.
Just to round it up.
Yeah, I think that's the deal Carlos Beltran signed in 2005. I think it was somewhere close to that. Maybe I'm over-exaggerating it, but
I don't know off the top of my head. But
so if I'm the Royals, because, you know, if you're the Royals, you're going to have to say, look, we can't do the $25 million a year thing. You know, we've got to operate within the parameters we have. This is the absolute best we can offer. We love you. We've nurtured you. We know you love it here. Take a little bit of a discount. We'll guarantee you this money, and let's make a run at this thing. And, you know, I think that would be – I would be on board with that 100%. But, you know, if you're talking, okay, if he wants $140 million, $150, $175, $200 million, you know, which a month ago when he was killing it, 2 months ago when he was killing it, it was – he's a $200 million guy. So – you know, Royals can't offer that much, but even if they could he be worth it? To me, I don't know that Eric Hosmer would be worth $200 million. Somebody, you know, assuming everything continues and that assessment is right, somebody's going to pay him that. So by virtue of the market, he's worth $200 million. But if you ask me, for the production that he gives you, knowing his inconsistencies throughout his career, even though he has this good defense, I don't know that he's worth it. So, you know, So 126, we'll call that the cutoff for me. Where's the cutoff for you, for Eric Hosmer? If the Royals have a deal, if what Boddicker said is true, the Royals have a deal on the table right now, where's your cutoff that you hope it doesn't go above?
I don't know. I mean, I've always been a huge Eric Hosmer fan. When he's a prospect, he was my favorite prospect. When he came up, he was the one I was most excited about. You know, I've been waiting for a breakout for a long time, but the more you see him, the more you kind of notice that, you know, he's very streaky. He's, you know, he's a guy who's always hit the ball on the ground a lot. You know, when he does hit for power, he hits the ball a long way, and he's got power to all fields, and that's great. But, you know, comparing him to other first basemen, it's difficult because he's not the typical kind of guy, even though he looks like it. He looks like a guy who should be able to go put 30 bombs on the board every season, and he hasn't even done 20 yet. And part of that is, yeah, he plays half his games in Kauffman Stadium, and he plays another good chunk at Comerica, and he plays another chunk at Target Field. You know, those are some pretty big stadiums in his division. You know, but still, other guys can hit 20 homers a year. You know, it's not that difficult really in the league right now.
I mean, how many Royals had three guys that did it last year?
Yeah.
And he wasn't one of them.
Yeah, it's so on that kind of front, it's tough for me to be thinking like the $200 million. I couldn't see that happening even when he was crushing the ball earlier. You know, that would be like a $20 million a year contract for 10 years, and you know, I think that initial report came from John Heyman, which, you know, is always a grain of salt with the John Heyman report, especially when it's a Scott Boras client. You know, for whatever reason on those things. So I don't know. I don't know where I would put that. I mean, to me, he's entering those peak years, or what we assume are peak years. You know, I would have liked to have seen him, you know, earlier this year, he had that like 1 week where he struggled and he came right out of it and he was on fire just as quickly as he had slumped. And you felt like, okay, this is an indication that Eric Hosmer is for real this time. Now, he hasn't hit a homer since the 4th of July, you know, and even before that, it was June 10th. So, you know, you go back to June 10th, he had two homers off Chris Sale the other way, you know, two opposite field homers off one of the best pitchers in baseball, who's a lefty, you know, so that's pretty remarkable.
That's impressive.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And he's hit one home run since. You know, he's slugging .300 since then. And, you know, that's not quite 2 months, but it's close to 2 months. That's pretty tough to you know, at least for me to sit there and think that, okay, I would like to get him on an extension. I don't know that I'm at a place anymore where I would be looking for that kind of a big deal, where I don't know that I would consider him to be consistent enough to get that kind of a deal. So, we talked a little bit about this before the season. I think what Brandon Belt got, what was his deal? I don't remember. It was like,
I don't know. 7 years, $90 million or something? No. Something $90 million.
Sounds about right.
6 years, $90 million?
I'm not sure. I'm going to look it up real quick.
I got Baseball Reference open. I should have this. Let's see.
But that's the kind of territory that I would be looking at. And really, at the time, it was a pretty apt comparison.
6 years, $79 million. Sorry.
Yeah. So I might, I would think you would figure on inflation. Hosmer's making about $8 million a year this year. I would figure in his final year of arbitration, assuming they get to that point, he'd probably make about 12, 12 and a half or something, unless he just really tanks it continuously the rest of the season. And I do think he will come back. I think he'll hit 20 homers this year, but he's not going to be that 300, 400, 500 guy he looked like he might have been in late May, where he was playing like a superstar. So I think a little more than the Belt contract would probably fit for him. Maybe 6 years, $100 million, something like that. It's not too far off from where yours is, but that's, significant. It's probably about, 14, $15 million a year, something like that. I guess I can do the math, couldn't I?
Sorry, what were the numbers you said again?
I said 6 and 100.
6 and 100, that's 16.5 million a year.
Yeah, that feels more comfortable. And that would probably be to where he's, 32 and he's making probably 18 million a year or something like that. And you could probably defer that in some other way and plus incentives and, whatever. But I think that, there's not really like that huge prospect unless you count Hunter Dozier. So in that sense, yeah, it's nice to be able to have Hosmer to stick around. But at the same time, I don't think he's going to end up in that spot where he's hitting like Joe Mauer at a 300-plus level consistently, or where he's hitting a bunch of homers like, Anthony Rizzo, or, a lot of times people would call him like the next Joey Votto when he was coming up. He's not going to hit that level, I don't think. So it's that really limits how comfortable I would be to pay him big for an extension. Now, I would be happy with it because I like him as a player. I like to know that he's on the team. The defense is there. He's a okay base runner, even though he makes some over aggressive mistakes. But he's generally
I think that's the Royals' issue more than it is his.
Yeah, I think the Royals are very
for pushing the aggressiveness.
Very, if they're going to make a mistake, they'd rather make the mistake being aggressive than passive, which is fair enough. That's their game. I would say that 6 years, $100 million. That's kind of what it feels like to me. I think that's enough of a bump over what Belt got. Plus, it kind of bakes in the idea that salaries are, they go up every year. So an extension made 5 months after Brandon Belt would probably be a bigger contract for a similar player who Hosmer's younger anyway. So that's going to be taken into account. So I think I would go for it. I would be cautious. I would be, a little bit anxious about how it might turn out, but you would still have a lot of upside. And if he's looking for that kind of stability and that kind of long-term thing, I think that would work for him too. And, he's able to be a marquee kind of guy, all-star MVP, starter in the all-star game. Plus he's been featured on, video games and other things over the last couple of years.
Ballers.
Was he in Ballers?
He had I guess it was funny because I like Ballers. My wife is she'll watch it if she happens to be in the room. And we were there, and he's just, they're having a party on a yacht, and it's just him, like sitting in the crowd of other famous athletes with him, you know? And so you like, it shows him and then it kind of pans away from him. And I was like, holy shit, was that Eric Hosmer? My wife was like, no. And I was like, nah, that was totally him. And so I rewound it and I was like, oh, see, it's them. And she's like, I missed it. I didn't see him. It's like, that's totally him. So I actually, I did like the frame by frame, pause, unpause thing until it got to him. And I was like, that is him. And she's like, I don't see it. I don't think it's him. I don't believe you. And so then I looked it up and there was some article about it somewhere, but because it takes place in Miami where he's from.
Oh, yeah. So there you go.
He was probably home for the off season when they were filming, was hanging out with somebody and they were like, hey, you want to be in Ballers? And he was like, yeah.
Why would he not?
Exactly.
And it's like, if he can get those kind of things happening to him in Kansas City, then, you know, yeah, in New York, he'd probably get even bigger. But, you know, I think he's doing all right for himself. So
he's got the recognition.
Yeah. I mean, people kind of know him. I would say that, yeah, if he's willing to kind of stay in Kansas City, if he likes it, you know, I think that he would probably be open to an extension, and maybe that's a little lower than market value, but, you know, if the right team, the right organization, it could be something that he'd be interested in. So I don't know. I would definitely sign him to something, but, I certainly wouldn't be thinking $200 million. You know, I'm a little more conservative, I guess. And, you know, he could go on a tear over the next month and you could ask me again and I would be like, yeah, give him all the monies and yep. I don't care. Just keep him around. So, I mean, it can certainly change. And if it's something where he gets if he is distracted by it and they do get it done, hey, maybe that's a benefit. Maybe that gives him 5, 6, 7 years where he doesn't have to worry about it and can just go and hit and play defense and be the centerpiece of the entire organization. And or I guess maybe Sal Perez, both he and they could share it. They're friends.
I think
they
could share with that.
So yeah, I'd be okay with that. I would be interested to see if there's an offer that's actually out there, what it is, because I don't know that the Royals, while they would want to keep him, you know, they do have their own constraints on what they can pay. And if he's looking for $20 million a year, I don't think they can do that.
No, I certainly don't either. So, I think with that, on that note, we will end our show today, as there's, quite honestly, there's not a whole lot more to talk about. We didn't talk about Roa Mondesi, but not much to talk about yet. We'll let it simmer for another week. The Royals brought him up. He started last night, went 0-3, 0-4,
He didn't get a hit. 0-3. They only got 3 hits all day. So,
yeah,
I mean,
he didn't get a hit.
There wasn't a lot going on with the bats.
And he made an error. So, bang up job on the major league debut.
Just like, yep, this is great. He also got a double play, though. So, I mean, there's that.
There is that. You know, credit where it's due. But hopefully, after another week, we'll have some more information. He's super young. His birthday is today. He turns 21 today. So, congrats to him. Happy birthday to Roa Mondesi. But that's insane that he's up in the major leagues as a 21-year-old. You know, that's typically reserved for your Manny Machado, Mike Trout, those types of guys that come up really young. So Eric Hosmer's, etc. So hopefully he turns out to be that level of a player. We will see. So we'll talk about that more next week since we'll have more to talk about. And hopefully we can talk about the Royals. Maybe they do something exciting. Maybe they make a trade that's not super horrible that people like, and it injects some life into the team, and they re-sign Raul Ibanez, and he tells them how good they are, and then they take a tear, and next thing you know, the Royals are back in the thick of it. You know, that's a lot to happen in a week, but it's crazier things have occurred. So stick with us all season. We've got the rest of the way, good, bad, or ugly, we're still going to be here talking some Royals. And we thank you all so much for listening. Speaking of which, wanted to give a shout out. We got a really cool email from Bjorn.
Yeah. Is that his name? Bjorn. Bjorn is a Royals fan in Germany and sent us a nice email. And so we're really, really glad to hear from him. And, you know, if you want to send us something and call us stupid, we're even happy to get those emails. So
yes,
you can just send. You know, go ahead.
Bjorn's email was, he kind of just told us his story of how he was a Royals fan and how he found our podcast, and super awesome to know we have, you know, enough reach to have some guy in Germany find us. You know, and I have very proud German heritage in my family, so it's cool to see that. He said he was a Royals fan ever since he came over here and studied abroad when he was younger. So if you have any, you know, royal stories or whatever that you'd like to share or anything like that, then go ahead and email them to us, and you know, we can talk about them on the air. Maybe we'll share some of our own royal stories.
That's kind of what we do.
Indeed. So thanks to Bjorn for the awesome email, and thanks to all you listeners, everybody, for listening to us, for keeping us going, for interacting on Twitter, for sending us emails, for doing all the rest. We really appreciate it. Wouldn't be here without you. Absolutely love all of you so very much. So thank you all for listening. Make sure to tune in next week, where we'll continue talking some Royals. But until then, we'll see you next time. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at BProKansasCity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.